to the book of Luke, chapter 16. Luke chapter 16, we'll read verses 1 through 8 from this good old book. And our subject this morning is worldly wise. Worldly wise. Reading beginning in verse 1. And he said, this is Jesus speaking here, or it's about Jesus. And he said also unto his disciples, there was a certain rich man which had a steward, and the same was accused unto him that he had wasted his goods. And he called him and said unto him, how is it that I hear this of thee? Give an account of thy stewardship, for thou mayest be no longer steward. Then the steward said within himself, what shall I do? For my Lord taketh away from me the stewardship. I cannot dig. To beg, I'm ashamed. I am resolved what to do, that when I am put out of the stewardship, they may receive me into their houses. So he called every one of his Lord's debtors unto him and said unto the first, how much owest thou unto my Lord? And he said, 100 measures of oil. And he said unto him, take thy bill and sit down quickly and write 50. Then said he to another, and how much owest thou? And he said, 100 measures of wheat. And he said unto him, take thy bill and write 40. And the Lord commended the unjust steward because he had done wisely, for the children of this world are in their generation wiser than the children of light. Now we want to focus on verse 8 for our central theme this morning. And we want to realize that the Greek word generation here in this verse ought to be understood to mean much the same thing that generation means to us today. And it means, you know, we often use it in relation to a group of people that grew up at the same age together. But really, generation means within a person's lifetime. That's his generation. Your generation is whatever is within your lifetime. And so, in a sense, it does mean everybody in a certain age group. But it also can mean everybody that lives out a certain lifespan and everything related to that time in which they live. And so, keep that in mind as we look at the truths that Jesus taught in these verses. Now, we want to remember that concerning verse 8, this is a carnal or temporal boss that's commending this unjust caretaker. That is to say, here's a man of the world that is commending another individual, and by recognizing that this other individual that really clipped his boss, in a sense, can be commended because he's shrewd and he's opportunistic and he has a lobbying kind of spirit, a favor-currying kind of spirit. Now, keep in mind, as I said, this is a worldly boss commending a worldly caretaker who pulled off a slick number. But Jesus has a lesson for this, for us in it. Now, we also need to understand that wise in the context of this reading means that it is wisdom about worldly things. Wisdom on how to conduct your business in the world. And so, this is the kind of wisdom that this unjust steward is commended for. And the limiting phrase that we have for by which we can understand the limit that Jesus placed on the wisdom that he's talking about here is, the limiting phrase is, in their generation. In their generation. In other words, Jesus is saying, in a person's, a worldling's generation, he is wiser, worldly wise, than the children of light are in their generation in which they live. That's what he's saying. Now, we want to also be aware that the Lord here was contrasting the earthly journey of a man who's worldly minded against the earthly journey of a man who's spiritually minded. Remember that contrast, because it's important for you to understand what he's really teaching us here, what he's really saying about worldlings, people that are lost, people that are not children of light. And it'll help us to understand what he's really teaching us when we get down to teaching what lessons there are for us in this. Now, as we look at this, we realize that if we miss this critical point about the earthly journey versus the spiritual journey, we'll imagine that the Lord Jesus here is commending corrupt and deceitful and opportunistic and cheating business practices, when what he's really teaching by pointing to this boss's commendation of this unjust caretaker is the steward's shrewd use of money and influence to gain security and to make important men owe him something. That's what he's teaching us. He's teaching us that the unjust steward gets commended because the shrewd, worldly boss recognizes a slick move when he sees it. So, from the world's point of view, this steward was wise. He was wise in what he did in lobbying those debtors and in some other things that we can see if we'll just look into it just a little. Now, I don't want to spend too much time on this, but I do want us to get the groundwork for what's being commended here, lest we miss the whole point. Now, the construction of the statement in this verse, in verse 8, by the Lord Jesus, allows us to understand that the last phrase could be applied to either the boss who commended the caretaker, or the caretaker, or both of them. And I really believe he meant it to be applied to both of them. We usually take Christ's words to be something said about that unjust steward. But I want to emphasize that I believe he could also and did also include the boss. Now, how can we apply his statement to the boss? Well, I think it goes something like this. I believe the boss was being worldly wise himself, was looking at the caretaker's action, and he undoubtedly knew, I believe that he knew, although Jesus doesn't tell this, but by him commending the unjust caretaker, I believe he knew that if the caretaker just walked off and left things hanging, he would have never got his money out of those debtors, because he really didn't know, probably didn't know how much they owed. He might not have even known who they were, because if you look at the construction of the words here, you recognize that the caretaker was the supervisor of his master's lending activities. I don't believe the big boss really had a handle on who he'd loaned money out to and who owed it and when they owed it back. But the caretaker knew. And so when he came up with this idea of currying favor with the debtors by halving their debt or more, what he did was two things. He built himself, and Jesus makes this out in the verses following this, he built himself some support out there in the business world, so that when he got fired, or when he had to pack up his goods, he'd already been fired when he did this, but he was closing up business. When he had to pack up his goods and leave, he'd have some people that he'd go to and say, "Now, you know, I did you a favor. I'd like to ask you just to help me out." That's the first thing that the caretaker was commended about. But I believe the other thing was the big boss thought, "You know, I would have never gotten that money if he hadn't pulled that off. And it's good for me that he did it, because I would have got zero, but now at least I got half of a return on my loan. So I got half my money back. I could have lost it every bit." And so he commends him, because having done that, he at least saved him part of his money. Now, knowing this groundwork that I hope we've laid for you, let's trust the Holy Spirit to guide us into some lessons about this incident that Jesus tells us about, which may be a parable, And let's understand from what we see here some things about worldly wise people. First of all, worldly wise people are wiser in their generation because the human culture that they live in, their environment, the business world, the social world, the cultural world that they live in is a natural product of the unregenerate state of the people who formed the culture, who formed the society. Most societies on earth today are the product of the worldly or carnal segment of that society. There are a few cases in the world where Christians have enough influence that the society is formed around Christian principles. There was a time when the United States was such a nation. When it was first founded, the founding fathers had God in mind. They had following the principles of God in mind when they built or constructed the Constitution. But now, today, even the best of politicians are always tweaking the interpretation of the Constitution and taking out the God principle. But there was a time when it was founded on Christian principles. But this is not usually the rule. The rule is usually that materialistic, carnal, worldly human beings that form up a society influence the structure of the society. That's why that Jesus can say this about worldly people versus children of light. Because they're wiser in their generation because they're functioning in their environment. Things are built around the very principles that guide them. That's the reason why. So we ought to realize that all human societies function on worldly wisdom. Except those few exceptions I was talking about. In Ephesians chapter 2 and verse 2, Brother Ed read that to us this morning. This kind of cultural construction, worldly society, is called the course of this world. The course of this world. That is the direction of the world. The direction of the world is limited about spiritual things because the devil supervises the formation and guidance and direction of human-made societies. You ever let a group of humans take God out of the equation and form their laws and their policies and procedures and behavior in the society based on what they think is best? The devil will have it taken over in 24 hours. Because he's good at it. He knows exactly how to manipulate it. And it's his piece of cake, if you will. So we find that human societies function after the course of this world. And being that way, they are driven by worldly wisdom. Now the Apostle Paul in 1 Corinthians chapter 2, verses 6 and 7, makes a clear distinction between worldly wisdom and godly wisdom. There's a difference. There is a wisdom that the Bible recognizes is wisdom, and here Jesus is recognizing it, but it's worldly wisdom. And that's what drives most societies. Now, when a society is driven by human-made wisdom, we find that they will always function in a direction that drifts further and further away from God, and their wisdom will always be, when compared up against God's wisdom, it'll be utter foolishness. Let me show you an example. A world example. Fits for the United States, fits for the rest of the world. And I'm going to use as an example the idea of capital punishment. Everybody's got their idea about capital punishment. But you know what the majority idea across the world is? Don't engage in capital punishment as a nation. 74% of the world's nations have abolished capital punishment as a means of punishment for crime. No more death penalty. 74% of the nations on the face of the planet. Now, why is that significant? Because God explicitly commands the death penalty for some things. Do you see how counter to the will of God, to the commandments of God, to the principles of God, the nations of the earth are in just this one thing alone? Capital punishment. Now, it turns out that a bunch of other countries are considering abolishing it. And in the United States, more than 50% of the states in the United States have abolished capital punishment or are thinking about it. Just now, there's something like half of that 50% has already abolished it, and another half are right now considering it. That's dreadful, brothers and sisters, that a nation founded on Christian principles decides in human wisdom that it's a good thing to abolish the death penalty for any crimes at all. Now, go and get your go up on Google and find out which states have abolished capital punishment. And when you get ready to kill somebody, go over there and do it. You'll get a few years in prison, and then you'll be out on parole. Think about that. Think where we're going with this. This is human wisdom. The human wisdom that counters the wisdom of God. Now, to the human mind, without the understanding of God, this killing of members of a society is unduly brutal and cruel and uncalled for. That's the human mind functioning. Why would God institute capital punishment, the great God of the universe, if there wasn't an express purpose that fulfilled His will in it and that kept human societies cleansed of those who will take over and rule a human society by power of fear, if they're not brought to justice and put to death and gotten out of the society? You and I know that's exactly the way it needs to go, and abolishing capital punishment will absolutely rule that out. And before long, any and all societies that do that will get caught up in and consumed by brutality and force, and it will rule the day because nobody's afraid of punishment. I mean, nowadays you can go to prison for life. You've got your own TV. Some of them have got their own cell phone. You've got your own recreation yard. You've got this and you've got that. Why, the privileges there are all paid for by me and you. And you have, and those who go to prison can live there a lifetime and enjoy a pretty good life. And they don't have to be afraid of being put to death for committing a crime guilty of death. That's human wisdom. That's human thinking. And it counters. It is contrary and opposite to the thinking of God. Now, this example about capital punishment, I think, ought to help us to understand how that in a culture and in the time in which a person lives, a person who is unregenerate shows up wiser in that generation than the children of light do. Because taking the capital punishment thing, if you agree with the rest of the human wise world or culture that you live in, oh, that a death penalty is cruel and unduly demanding. It demands too much of a person. It makes too great of a demand on those who are found guilty. It's just cruel and unjust to kill people for crimes. If you think that way, well, then the society that has abolished capital punishment says, my friend, fellow countryman. But let's suppose you live in that society and you say, no, 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 no. God says, People are to be put to death when they're found guilty of this and that and the other and the other. Well, your society that has abolished capital punishment is going to say, you're an idiot. You're an oddball. You don't fit in. None of that, but I think you're just pretty brutal and cruel anyway. You don't have a heart for anything. Isn't that the way they do you? Yeah, it is. So, what would it appear like in the society in which you live? It'd appear like the guy that favors that kind of thing is wise. But it'll appear like you're stupid because you want capital punishment. See how it goes? The children of this world are in their generation wiser than the children of light. In their generation, that is, in the context of what they live in, the world of worldliness. That's what he teaches us. Now, let me ask the question then, why specifically are the worldly wiser in the present generation? Why are they wiser than the children of light? First of all, they're wiser regarding making their way amongst those of the worldlings. And I've already talked about that in the illustration. They're wiser making their way in the world regarding floating along in the society that accepts them. They're wiser because there's a reason for it. And it's because they're willing and free to practice bribery, deception, currying favors, and everything else that this unjust steward committed in order to get their way and to make it in their society, and they're willing and able and ready to do it at the expense of others. This unjust caretaker just cost his boss half of his payback on his loans. Now, I told you why I felt like the boss commended him. It wasn't because he lost half his money, it was because he got a half of it back. Because I think he saw that he wouldn't have got any if that old steward had walked away into the sunset and not communicated to him anything about who owed him anything. And so, but you see, what we're saying is, they fit. Those that are wiser than the children of light in their generation fit in their generation because they're willing and to use any practice necessary to obtain their ends and to fit into that society. Now, I think that this kind of behavior and attitude about living in your generation, I think this is wonderfully illustrated by a practice that we're all familiar with. The practice of lobbying and power politics. I think this is one of the best illustrations of how this unjust steward acted and of how people who are wiser in their generation than the children of light act. Lobbying and power politics is a wonderful illustration of it. Let me show you how that is. First of all, lobbying, for the most part, is the craft that has been developed by which special interest groups bribe politicians to favor them. Now, you can call it what you want to, brothers and sisters, but that's exactly what lobbying is. It's a bribery game. And if we as Americans could have our way, I believe we would wipe out lobbying, make it unlawful and punishable by prison to be conducted in America unless the lobby was a lobby group that petitioned the Congress of the United States in behalf of majority America. Because, you know, that kind of lobbying is understandable. That's the way it started out. It started out with the majority of America, the colonies, the people, the citizens of the colonies wanted this, that, or the other for the national or federal government to handle and deal with. And so a committee of people petitioned in behalf of the colonies to get that done. But pretty soon, the money started trickling in. I'll support your campaign. I'm just telling you, campaign contribution. No, by the way, over in my state, we need a power plant down here at so-and-so. Just thought you'd want to know, since you're going to be in Congress, and I'd like to ask you to consider it. And here's your $1 million for your campaign. That's lobbying, brothers and sisters. And it is a form of bribery that pays politicians to favor special interest groups. So the effects of lobbying are seen in the power politics, where those elected officials spend tax dollars to fund projects that are wanted by special interest groups who supported them in their election. We usually call this today payoff, don't we? It is absolutely gone wild. It is the way politicians are doing business today, and I tell you, it is the perfect illustration of the way that children of this world are wiser in their generation than the children of light. In a society that permits and encourages and approves crookedness, the child of the world can act crooked and be commended for it. That's what this boss did. Because he had the acumen of a worldly boss. Now, that's the side that children of light recognize is going on. But children of light, living in an environment like that, have constraints that we call Christian ethics. And when we practice our Christian ethics, it makes us look like novices and idiots in the midst of those practicing worldly wisdom, doesn't it? Because we're not going to sucker anybody, but they are. We're not going to lie to anybody to get something for ourselves, but they are. We're not going to cheat the taxpayers out of money through a politician to get something done for our special interest group because we can, but they are. We have Christian ethics. In 2 Corinthians chapter 4 and verse 2, the Apostle Paul summarizes it real nicely. He says, "But we, children of God, have renounced the hidden things of dishonesty, not walking in craftiness," and so on. We have renounced the hidden things of dishonesty. Those slick, sneaky, underhanded, behind the doors, under the table, trickeries to get things in the temporal world at the expense of others. We've renounced them. And we've renounced walking in craftiness, being the slick fox of the world, like the worldling is in no way prevented from doing and being. Now, if a child of God participates in a lobbying scam to get tax money for a special interest objective, he's participating in a kind of dishonesty and craftiness, since lobbying itself is a device of pure deception. You see how a child of God would be doing? If he could conduct himself like the worldling, he could get neck deep in lobbying too. And he could turn the tax money of the American taxpayer to his own personal glory, gain, fame, or power, like the lobby groups do. But we have renounced those things. And that's why we look like idiots. That's why it looks like and is that in the generation of worldly mindedness, in a culture that is consumed by carnality and worldliness, children of the world are wiser about how to flow through that culture and society than the children of light are, because the children of light follow another wisdom and another set of rules. Now, we find These children of the world are also wiser and making themselves a place in this world because they have their focus on the world and its things, don't they? That's what they're focused on. The world and its things is all the world to them. They're not interested in anything else. You can't expect a worldling to be because he doesn't know anything about the kingdom of God. They are focused on the world. You know, have any of you ever hunted coyotes? Maybe you haven't. Maybe you have. But you've been around Tennessee long enough to know how slick coyotes are. They're the slickest dudes out in the forest. They really are. I mean, they can be invisible standing in plain sight. They can slip in and get something and go out and you'll never know they're there. I killed a deer up in Maryland while we were up there and drug it out, field dressed it and drug it out to the truck. Turned around, went back to the truck, back to the field dress site. The entrails and the scrap was gone. And there were the coyote tracks. It was less than 150 yards from my truck. Slick. They're slick. How? Why are they so slick? Because they grew up out there in the wild. They saw every leaf and every blade of grass. They watched every movement, listened to every sound, watched mama and watched daddy as they conducted themselves in a world of death and in a world of food. And they learn things and gain that wisdom of the coyote to live in the wild. And that, brothers and sisters, is exactly the way the children of this world are in this present, in this generation in which they live. It's all of their element. It's all. They swim in it. They are over their heads in it. And so they learn about it and learn how to maneuver in it. And it's the only thing that takes up the focus of their lives. And you're bound to get worldly wise if your whole focus is about the things of the world. So, what a lesson Jesus teaches us about those of this world. What a lesson the unjust steward and his boss teach us about the worldly folks around us, how they conduct themselves, and why they appear and are worldly wiser than the children of light. They have nothing else to lean on for wisdom. And they wouldn't care about any other wisdom if it walked up and slapped them in the face. They're concerned about worldly wisdom. And so truly, in a world consumed by carnality, by flesh, the children of this world are in their generations wiser than the children of light. Tonight, Lord willing, we're going to look at lessons we may learn from the worldly wise. Because Jesus didn't just teach this to show us how the worldly wise were more worldly wise than the children of light. But rather, He taught us this to teach us what lessons we could learn from this absolute truthful fact about how the worldly wise are. And tonight, Lord willing, we'll look at that and we'll consider what lessons can we learn from these worldly wise folks that we live in the midst of.